You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures podcast can be found at drawincustomers.com/podcast. We are locally underwritten by the Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. And today we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from Craig LeMasters, the author of Unstuck, as well as the chairman of GXG. So Craig, how are you doing today?
I'm great, James. Thanks for having me. I love the work you do. And so I've been excited about chatting with you today.
Yeah, this is pretty sweet. Let's start with GXG, and you're just telling people what is GXG. We'll start there.
Yeah, so GXG is an advisory firm, consulting firm, and we have a simple mantra, and that is I'm a little bit obsessed with the term stuck. I think leaders get stuck on hard stuff. And so our practice is around really helping companies of all size, small companies all the way up to Fortune 500 companies, get unstuck. And as you mentioned, that's why I wrote the book. I have a small book that I wrote that explains the methodology, and it is called Unstuck. And so that's what I do.
Nice. And how long has GXG been around?
Yeah, so we've been around for 6 years, and I did this really, my background is in big company public life. I got to run a big company for a long time, James, and was actually CEO of a publicly traded company for 11 years, which by CEO standards is like a dinosaur, I guess. And those of your listeners that have been involved in public companies maybe before they got into small business like I did as well, will recognize the fact that 11 years in public company terms is actually 44 quarters because unfortunately that's how they operate. Right. And so I got to do that for a long time and then told my board, like I said, about 6 years ago that I was going to leave. So I walked away from a pretty cool job, quite frankly, but I got to do it a long time. And my passion was to go start a small firm and then take some of the cool stuff that other people taught me, quite frankly, that worked, and go share it with other business leaders. That was just my passion. And trust me, had no idea how to do that. I never owned a small company, never started a company, never ran one. So back to your theme, I'm sure I made every mistake in the book the first 3 years, but we're here at year six and it's doing extremely well. So I'm happy about that because again, we just want to help people get unstuck. I think we get stuck on really hard stuff.
Yeah, well, you made it over the 5-year hurdle, which is a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal, right? That's a big deal.
And I can assure you that every small business, well, even big business owner, has made mistakes, and they will continue to make mistakes. There's no such thing as a mistake-free business owner.
That's right.
It's not one that I've met, anyways.
Absolutely.
So what made you decide to go off on your own versus just working for another company? Or
I know it. Yeah. My friends ask me that all the time. Still are like, wow, you had a pretty good gig going there. Why would you do this? And candidly, I tell people this all the time. I do a lot of speaking and tell folks that I believe I'm the luckiest, most fortunate guy in the world when it comes to business because I really had my dream job. I got to run a big company. We did a lot of cool global expansion. We were in 25 countries around the world, did a lot of digital transformation stuff. But I got to a point where I've been very blessed financially because of all that. But I got to a point where it really came down to more of a purpose thing. I've got a great succession plan, people that can run this like me. You know, I'm fortunate that I was healthy, you know, and what could I do to maybe help others a little more? And I just had a strong urge to go tell the story of what I call Unstuck now and see if it would resonate with other leaders. Because my whole hypothesis, James, was that leadership is a really hard job. I don't care if you're running a company of one or a company of, you know, many, many tens of thousands like I did. It doesn't matter. It's really hard. And I have a real empathy for that. And I just almost felt this need to share these things that worked for me and one core methodology that really worked because I thought it might help people. And again, that's, you know, again, is that the smartest business move? Is it smartest? I don't know. That didn't really matter to me. I just felt like it's something I just want to tell the story. And it started super slow. You know, you go out into any industry. I mean, consulting has been around since the beginning of time, literally. Right. And all of a sudden I'm out there going, hey, there's a whole different way to think about this. There's a whole different way to learn. There's a whole different way to solve problems. And, you know, even people that were pretty close to me were like, okay, but, you know, I'm used to doing it this way. So right. it was a really slow grinding start, like you said, like most of us go through. But that's okay because I believed in it. But that's why I left. That's why I did this. And I got to tell you, I can say now at the 6-year mark, it's been a blast. Even when we were just going slow and trying to convince people to try it and building and all that good stuff. I mean, you'd say it's easier now a little bit on the backside when you're growing pretty well. And it's working, but I think it was fun even in the grinding part is because the people that joined me believed in it like I do. And, but that's why I left. That's why I'm doing it.
Nice. That's fair. I can completely understand just from my business coaching practice.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's yeah. Fun.
There's nothing cooler or not many things cooler, especially legal ones. When you see a business owner that you talk to and you see their business, I just passed one on my local travels here the other day.
Yeah.
I helped coach a woman that had she was putting together a retail store for hemp and all that kind of stuff as it becomes right. Illegal. And she was actually up and rolling.
Nice.
I'm like, that's super cool that she went from corporate job, good pay, you know, 8 to 5. Clock out at 5 o'clock, super tons of vacation benefits, blah blah blah, all that stuff.
Right.
It's like, that's too easy. Let's go start your own gig.
Well, isn't that great? And good for you. That's why I love your work, because you obviously share a lot of knowledge with people through this format and wisdom with people. But then you're also, you know, really digging in and coaching and really helping people figure stuff out. And I love that because I'm a big fan. We all need that. And it is, I mean, you know, when you're in the corporate world, which of course I grew up in, and I mean, I spent 27 years doing that, just 11
Did you
years
really?
As a CEO. Yeah. I was 27 years literally with the same company.
Whoa.
And got to be CEO for 11 years. Now we changed a lot. We bought a lot of companies and then were bought. So it's a lot of different entities, but the same core organization for a long time. And so that's kind of what, you know, I knew and what I did. And what's fun is when you go out of that and get into the small business world and do what you were just describing, to me, it's so exciting because you do realize that, what is it, 80% of the world GDP is small businesses. It's not big companies. And that has a real, that's very impactful. And so, like I said, that's why for me, it has been a blast to be a part of this community. I get to be in the corporate community and now I get to be a part of the, really the small business community, which is fun. Yeah.
I want to pick your brain a little bit in regards to contrasting the corporate working quarter by quarter business and having a crew to do essentially what you tell them to.
Everything.
Versus the small business now where you may be the guy that's emptying the trash
as well as
selling and all that. And quarter by quarter is not necessarily how you
have
to live.
Yeah.
So can you just compare those, I guess, stuff that you expected and then stuff that maybe you're just like, whoa, where'd that come from?
Yeah. I mean, a couple quick thoughts. And you hit on something very important, which is you do get spoiled if it's a good company. We had a very good company and the company did well, et cetera. And quite frankly, you do get kind of spoiled because you can afford a lot of sort of amenities and a lot of support, a lot of staff, a lot of people, and hopefully you're doing it efficiently, but it's a pretty good deal. And the challenge is you don't really know that until you don't have it. Like most things in life.
Don't know what you got till it's gone.
Until it's gone. And then all of a sudden, you know, I started down this path and, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You kind of look around and you're like, okay, somebody's got to turn the lights off. Somebody's got to, you know, take the garbage out. Got to do all the stuff. And so that is a change. Let's not kid ourselves. And I tell friends that are doing this kind of thing, and I think COVID has driven a lot of this, quite frankly, so maybe we should talk about, but COVID did drive a lot of corporate people to rethink and maybe go in to do their own thing. And I've seen a lot of that.
Really?
But,
okay.
Yeah. But with that said, I think that's a very real thing that I would say is a big, big change. Now, for me, I loved it. I use the analogy to people of, you know, I was at an agent stage and ready to go stop, you know, directing the people cutting the grass and go out and cut the grass for a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and it's been a great season for me the last 5 years to get to roll up my sleeves and kind of do that at the gut level, the heart level. Yeah. So that, that is one big change. The second one, and again, you touched on it, is I have loved the freedom to think about the business from whatever time frame I want to think about it. Mm-hmm. And to be candid, you can't do that in a public company. I mean, you'll hear CEOs talk about it and debate and probably debate me with this. Oh, no, we have a long-term plan, long-term vision. I get all that. But I promise you, and again, I do it for 44 quarters. Here's how it works. You walk out of the earnings call, right? So you do these funny earnings right. call and you release your earnings and you've got 11 weeks to prepare for the next earnings call. Okay. That's how it works. And again, not that you're not also thinking longer term and doing it, but it is a completely different headset. I mentioned to you before we started that mm-hmm. I'm helping a big family enterprise right now as well, that who was a client at GXG, and now I'm helping them part-time as well. And even though it's a pretty big company, it's still private and it has that same luxury of not having to worry about quarterly earnings. And again, that might be your thing quarterly, but you get to pick. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, as a longtime corporate public company guy, that's a super refreshing way to think about it. And I tell private companies that I work with now all the time that are clients that have not experienced the other, that you need to appreciate it as you need to appreciate this as well. And, and really take that seriously, because it is, for me, it's been very freeing kind of to think differently about it.
I bet just the end of the year is probably a little more liberating than
it's amazingly liberating. I mean, you think about fiscal, and it's a funny thing, actually, if you telescope back a little bit, it's like, where did we start this fiscal year concept even? Like, why? And I used to tell people all the time, like, we are not a different company from December 31st to January 1st, just because the calendar changed one day. We're the same company. Mm-hmm. And I think it actually taints a lot of things in terms of companies. And one of the things I've done running my own private company and then helping private companies, in our firm, is to get them to think about budgeting and financial planning completely different. And what I mean by that is we should use whatever time frame makes sense to us and not be biased by the traditional corporate monthly, quarterly, annual earnings thing. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's not always negative, but it does bias our thinking. Like, why should I care if I have my own small business private company that one quarter is different than others? If I have goals that are longer term that I really care about, right? I mean, whether that happens in December, January, or October, right? The reality is it doesn't really matter, right? Mm-hmm. As long as I'm on path to that longer term goal. Mm-hmm. And I find it's a huge advantage if I think we're serious about our planning and we're serious about our goals. It's a huge advantage because you are right. The time constraints of public company drive a lot of stress. Let me just leave it at that.
I bet.
Tremendous stress, unnecessary, tremendous stress. Yeah. But it is the reality, and that's not going away. That is just the reality of it.
You know, it's interesting. I used to have a printer repair company.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot for a long time. I learned a lot when you go into these offices. And I can remember going into a decent size, it was a healthcare type facility.
Right.
And in the vestibule between the two door, outside door and inside door.
Yeah, yeah.
They had their daily stock price that was updated every hour.
Yeah.
I'm like, can you imagine going for lunch?
Yeah.
And whatever happened on Wall Street or whatever, is going to affect how you feel when you go get your Mexican food or whatever.
It does, though. I mean, and don't kid yourself that it doesn't. And again, I'm a big goal person. I think goals are important no matter what kind of organization you lead. So I have no issue that I'm super competitive. But what happens is it converts into almost this idol worship kind of concept. Right.
Totally.
And boy, that I have seen some really strong people get crushed by the ebb and flow of a stock price.
Right.
And here's the punchline. Sometimes it's reacting to something we did, either positive or negative. Most of the time it's not. Right. So if you think about it, now we've got a metric that you have some control, but not a lot of control over, quite frankly. We think we do.
Right. I would bet it's in the neighborhood of 10%, maybe.
Yeah. And then it's kind of ruling your life. That's not a great life if you get there. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I was able to do it for a long time because fortunately our organization and our board supported the idea of that hey, look, we're gonna heads down, do what we can do to influence it, and which is basically build a great company, build as best the best earnings we can, tell the story as best we can, and then the price will be what it is. Depends on how many people want to buy and how many people want to sell. Right. But we were pretty good at managing that. But I can promise you, most of my friends that are in it and clients that I've been around all these years, I've seen it eat people alive. Mm. And to your point, it's funny you mentioned the lunch thing, to literally be talking to people and they'll talk about like their stock price during the day. I mean, that's Looney Tunes. I mean, when you really think about it, like in their entire mood, their entire like self-worth is like influence, like, oh, we're down, you know, $1.10 so far today. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, we gotta stop talking about it because it's starting to give me chills. Just, you know, or, you know, it's been 6 years. So you're bringing back, this is going to turn into a psychology. I'm going to need counseling in a minute, James. So we better shift gears.
Fair. Totally fair. Let's talk about small business. That's more fun anyways.
I love that.
So when you left your gig, 27 years, when you left your gig, was the idea to do the consulting thing, or did that evolve?
It evolved a little bit. And this is a true story. And the board didn't believe me because I didn't know what I was going to go do. Right, I really didn't have a big plan. I just knew I wanted to go talk about and show people this methodology that worked so well for me. Mm-hmm. And I won't bore you with the details of how I ended up doing this company, but it took a couple of months to figure out like what format I wanted to do in it. I love speaking. So I knew I wanted to do some speaking and fortunately had, you know, a forum to do that, having been a CEO of a big company. And so I'm going down that path. I had a lot of friends running companies, so I knew I could help them just sort of ad hoc. And so I actually, the short version is, this wisdom-based learning methodology was a friend of mine who came up with the original idea. And so I helped him build this idea at my company. Oh. I was the first client.
All right.
And it was really cool because it worked. And so my team was helping him build it. And so he actually kept going. And I hadn't talked to him really that much the last few years. And so when I left, reconnected with him, and long story short, had a cup of coffee with him and at Dunkin' Donuts one day about 2 months after I left, and ended up buying the company and went home and told my wife that I'd found something to do. So I bought a company at Dunkin' Donuts.
His company.
Yeah. And it was a little company because he'd been percolating the idea. And he was a great entrepreneur, always had great ideas, had started a bunch of companies and sold them or left them or whatever, and didn't really know what to do with it because he didn't want into scaling it so much. So, so I thought, you know what? I'd help build the idea out. I thought we could take the idea and actually make a company out of it. And I liked it. Who was the guy, the shaving company guy that I liked the product so much that I bought the company? So it was kind of that kind of deal.
Oh, really?
Remember that? I don't know if you remember that. You're probably too young to remember that, but I think it was Gillette, the guy that he bought Gillette.
I remember commercials like that.
Yeah, the commercial, and you know, I liked it so much, I bought the company. So it was kind of the same thing.
All right.
And but the backstory is that it was perfect timing because, I mean, here I'd been running a big company all these years, and now I have four kids. Three were grown and out of college, out of the house, and we have a high school daughter at the time, so she's still at home. And of course, I go from doing all that, and all of a sudden, I'm at home with my wife, who's a radiologist, so she works at home, and my daughter. And after about a week, they had a little meeting with me and said, "Look, here's the deal. You know, you've been running this company, you've been traveling, doing all this stuff, and now you're like home all the time, just kind of watching us do our normal routine. And you keep offering to help," in air quotes, "and we're okay. It was just a nice way to say, you got to find something to do because you're driving us crazy."
All right.
So that's why I have a cup of coffee. And then actually, we had some construction going on at our house, and these guys were working in the backyard every day with bulldozers and all kinds of cool stuff. So I started going out there, and I'm literally sitting in the backyard watching them. And true story, I go to the construction forum because I'm super fascinated in this stuff, know nothing
Yeah.
about it. So I started asking him questions. And finally, he asked me, he's like, "Hey, what are you doing here, by the way? We've never really seen you here. You travel all the time." I said, "No, I just retired from public company life. I'm figuring out how I want to help other people." And he's like, "Okay, great." And so finally, one day I went back there, and I'm just sitting in my chair watching him. And so finally, I asked him, I said, "Hey, is there any chance I could like drive around with you during the day and just sort of see what you do and see how these guys?" The guy looked at me and he was great. He says, "No, I don't think that's a good idea." He's like,
Oh, I was like, that sounds like an awesome idea.
you really need to go find something to do."
Get
So
a job.
anyway, it's a long story, but that's how I ended up. And I think a lot of this stuff is fate. And I bump into this guy. We have a cup of coffee, and I bought it. So that's how I ended up starting GXG. Is again, sort of the shell was there,
Yeah.
and that was almost 6 years ago. And then we were off to the races.
So you guys figured out price and all that kind of stuff over a cup of coffee?
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, it took a little bit of negotiation and back and forth, and we came up with a pretty cool plan. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been through this, where he wanted to stay for a while, so we became partners. So I bought half the company, and we were partners for about a year, and then he wanted to retire. So then I bought the other half of the company, which actually worked pretty well because, it gave a chance to transition.
Yeah.
He had gotten some of the original clients, and so it was a pretty cool way to do it. But I will tell you, I mean, and again, you've probably been through this. You've had so many businesses, James, that, partnerships are hard. I mean,
Oh, yeah,
everybody
it's a
tells you
relationship.
that. And yeah, so that was good timing for us. I mean, we did that, like I said, for maybe a little over a year, and then it was great timing because I was ready to really grow the thing and take off, and he had some other interest, and so it was actually worked out great. I bought him out, and then so for 5 years, then I've been basically the sole owner for 5 years, and yeah,
It can really launch.
and we can yeah, we were able to move at some really a cool pace, and we've done that. And back to what we said earlier, without the quarterly earnings kind of pressure stuff, I can also, on the positive side, and I'm sure you've seen this, you can go at whatever pace you want to go. And
Yes.
I tend to move pretty fast. And one of the things that I found so freeing was I could meet with my small team at the time, and we could make a decision and just go start doing that in the afternoon. We could build a new version of our product. We could change our price points. We could do some new marketing, and didn't have to go through layers, didn't have to go to a board for approval. It's a little daunting at first because some of that you start to get comfortable with, right? It's a little bit of a security blanket. But for me, it was just so much fun. It's like, wow, we actually get to go kind of do this tomorrow.
You don't have to get approval and go
There's
through
no
the
approvals. There's no, it's just you. And now as we've grown a little bit, it's kind of fun transitioning because we have some people moving up, and several of our associates now will become partners here shortly.
Oh, wow.
And so that's kind of a cool next step for me where, we won't go back to that big formal corporate public company structure, but it's a great reward mechanism when you're in the consulting space for people that have done well and built big businesses, and they become more of the decision. And it's good for me because it allows me to go do some other things and free some of my time up because I've got other people to help with decisions and stuff. So
Oh, that's
yeah,
cool.
it's kind of a nice evolution, I think. but when still did, super nimble. Yeah.
Well, yeah. When I can tell you when I bought out, I had a business partner with Calls on Call to start.
Yeah.
And I bought her out 2.5 years ago. We're on over year 10 now.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world. Whole new world.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it was good from when we started and all that kind of stuff. She's cool. I'm cool. It was amicable and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where like there's pros and cons to partnerships.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Just like any relationship, it's work.
It really is. Somebody described it to me early on when I was heading down that path. They said, look, just think of it as marriage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, somebody, I'm 34 years in marriage right now. So that's a pretty important topic to me.
Right. And congrats.
After 34 years, you know what the ups and downs are. And quite frankly, there's a lot of challenges. And I think anybody would admit that. And I have an amazing spouse. But it's marriage, and I didn't listen to that carefully, because I think that's actually a pretty good description of it. And again, we were great. I mean, it worked out well, and it was good timing. But I mean, how many people do you know in your practice and your work that partnerships have ended very badly? I mean, it's a pretty high percentage, right?
More than I ever expected.
It's pretty high. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but just anecdotally, I know people, or at least my friends, I mean, most in, not just in, but in very badly, you know? So I do think it's something to be very, very aware of. And the ones I've seen work have been truly, truly complementary partners.
Right,
that
right.
almost do completely different things within the partnership. I have actually a really good friend who got into the healthcare space in a partnership with a friend of his.
Mm-hmm.
And I really spent time with them because I was worried about them. I'm like, you know, hey, those are great friends and this can be really hard. And they told me the story and they've actually done it. They have almost completely different skill sets.
All right.
So it's just complimentary, and but that doesn't happen often, right?
No.
Again, I don't know your situation, but that's but I was very grateful that ours ended the way it did, and then it's been, like your experience, very fun to be able to just go at the pace, and again, after 5 years of that, I'm looking forward actually to this next season. We'll all start to have, you know, some partners that have come up through the company, so they can take on partnership roles,
right.
But I won't have to cede operating control yet.
Right.
Because I'm not ready for that. So you can then decide how you bleed that in, so to speak.
Right.
That feels better to me.
I think with partnerships, what I did, I mean, looking back, right. Hindsight being 2020.
Yeah.
With that partnership, we didn't necessarily have defined roles.
Right.
So there was either a little bit of overlap or there was just stuff that didn't get done.
Exactly.
I thought you were going to do that, or I didn't even realize you weren't doing that kind of thing. So with other partnerships since then that I've started, you have clear defined silos. Like, that's your sandbox. This is my sandbox.
Bingo. Yeah.
Let's make some money.
Yeah. That's super smart. Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. It's
it took me a few mistakes to learn that. So.
Whew, I hear you.
So tell me, how did the name GXG come about?
It's a little bit of a funny story. So my former partner started out, and he was called Global Executive Group, and it's a mouthful. And again, the original vision of the company is quite different than what we do today. Actually, the guts are similar, but the vision was quite different. But what's funny is I think names and branding, I love the topic, and it's always, I think, it's just a really fun topic. And I've always found that you kind of know if your name's not resonating when the marketplace gives you a new name. Now, if that makes sense. So Global Executive Group is such a mouthful, and it sounds a little clubby and like a exclusive thing, which is kind of what he wanted actually. And I didn't. I mean, I just want this amazing wisdom-based learning for people to use it and know about it. So what happened was clients started truncating it for us. They started just somehow calling us GXG. It just sounded like GXG.
All right.
Literally. And so it got more and more traction. So when I bought the firm, I actually, because people were just calling us GXG, and we had all these great, you know, clients. So we just changed the name to GXG.
That's awesome.
So the real answer, James, is it means nothing. So It's just that's TXG. All right. That's all right. And we've debated the last even year as we've kind of grown and it's all working, I guess you could say now pretty well, about changing the name again to something that's meaningful. And I'm biased on the whole unstuck concept because that's right. kind of what we're known for is this unstuck methodology, this wisdom-based learning.
Yeah.
And so I keep threatening my team that we're going to change it to unstuck consulting. And they think that's just horrible. So
really,
I don't know. I thought it's cool. So back me up on this on the air so it's I can memorable. Play it for my team. Right.
I mean, otherwise people are going to be like, what's that company with the three letters? It
what is IBM, the James
AIG, ABC, RCA.
It's so funny. So anyway, yeah. that's how we became GXG, and at least for now, that's who we'll be. And it right. works fine. We've got a nice little brand in sort of our swim lane that we play in and that we appeal to.
All right.
It's getting there. So yeah.
Tell me about your book Unstuck, about when you wrote it, what inspired you to write it and all that jazz.
Yeah. Well, the inspiration was kind of cool because it came, at least for me anyway, because it came from our clients. So I'd been at this for a couple of years and we were starting to get some real traction. The methodology was working and we got these really amazing results. And I had a couple really, really wonderful clients that brought it up and said, hey, have you ever thought about just writing a book about this? This is really unusual and it works.
Nice.
I'm like, no, I'm not a writer. I'm not even a great reader, quite frankly, of books. And my wife is, and she taught her kids that the passion. And I just didn't. I didn't grow up doing that. I read a lot of current events and summaries of things, but so I never thought about it. So I don't want to ever pretend that I'm a writer. So, but I thought it was pretty cool that people thought it was important enough that I could write it. And then the more I learned about the advisory and consulting space and particularly for the speaking practice, it, you know, it's like, wow, you kind of need to have a book, it looks like. And so I took a shot at it and, you know, I had some just wonderful, wonderful advice because it got up to, I don't know, 250, 300 pages. And I wasn't super happy with it. And a friend told me that had written a lot of books said, hey, you realize that the average percentage of a book, a business book that anybody finishes is about 30%.
Right.
That's kind of,
I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. About 30% they finished. And so I'm like, where's this guy going with it? And all of a sudden it hit me. Well, if I'm at 300 pages and they're only going to read 100, why not write a 100-page book and try to beat the system? So I literally shrunk the book. So the book's 108 pages. It's not long. It's and it's been just, it was a great experience. Kind of hard. I mean, again, as a non-writer, but I really enjoyed putting on paper how this works. And it's a little rare in the consulting space because some of it is kind of secret sauce stuff, but I didn't really care because I just want people to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, I figured if we were good enough at explaining it and we make it very efficient for people to use this methodology, then it'll help. We'll get plenty of, you know, it'll help us get more business or whatever. And that's what's happened. But the best thing about the book for me, James, is we wrote it, sent the manuscript to 10 clients and said, took some advice, wrote the book, and 9 of the 10 clients wrote endorsements for us. And they're all wonderful people. Some are pretty well known in the business communities that they're involved in. Most of them are C-suite CEO kind of people. And I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, I'm just an unknown guy. I'm not a, you know, there's no fame here. But what I loved about it for my team especially was to show them that this is important enough that, you know, CEOs of big companies actually would pause and endorse our little book.
Yeah.
And that's been fun. And so it's worked great. It's a simple way to read about our methodology and some fun stories. It kind of parallels my story running a public company and how this methodology changed the way I thought about learning really.
Yeah.
And then the cool thing along the way is I think people started to recognize that some of the stuff in this is useful. Number one, on any size business, it's agnostic to the type of business, to the size of business. And it really works on most parts of life that this learning methodology can help with, you know, lot of stuff that we do, parenting and relationships and all kinds of stuff, which I didn't write it for that. I mean, I'm not smart enough to have all those tentacles, but that was some of the feedback I got. And so it's been really rewarding. And that's the Unstuck book story.
So, nice. So as far as publishing and marketing, all that kind of stuff, did you put it out there and push it much, or was it just like, put it out there, it's out there?
Yeah, we had a publisher that picked it up, that helped us. And then we have a really good internal marketing team, some folks that are really good at that. And then we had some external folks. And, but, you know, and again, probably like you, I mean, the book is really, I wrote it for a very specific audience and it got a little broader coverage. And so what I really wanted it to be was targeted for, again, leaders that get stuck on the hard stuff. But it ended up getting a little broader coverage than that. And so it's been mostly organic. Again, I didn't write it to be a famous author and need to sell a million copies of a book. I wanted it to be a great description of, you know, what we're trying to help with. So it's been fun. I'm not saying I would do it again. And I think I see your book in the background here as well.
Yeah, I get it.
On video here, you've got a bunch of them. And so you get it. I mean, it's for me anyway, it's not an easy thing to do. I think what I would do is, and as you know now, publishing is so cool and electronic and everything. Oh, yeah. I'll do some addendums to it. And particularly now we've got really cool case studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to start addending the book with some cool case studies that people can check out. Yeah.
So this is something that I find personally.
Yeah.
From my books, I want to ask you this. Do you ever find yourself in a place in your business where you're like, what did I write in my book? And kind of take your own advice a little bit?
Oh, I absolutely believe in that, James. I mean, I wouldn't have put it on paper if it's something that hadn't helped me and been the core of what I did running a big company. And I wouldn't have written it if I hadn't really tested all of this with a bunch of companies. By the time I wrote the book, I think we had worked in 12 industries and several hundred engagements using the exact same methodology.
Yeah.
And so I very much believe it. My friends and family will tell you that don't dare give me an opening to talk about wisdom-based learning and Unstuck, because you're going to have to settle into your chair. Because I believe in it. And I just think that's what we should do if we're passionate about things. A good friend of mine told me this the other day, and I think it's great small business advice, is that one of the ways that you can tell if you really believe in what you're doing, and I don't care what the product or service is, but if you really believe in it, it should be nearly impossible for you not to tell somebody about it.
Oh, very good idea.
You should be dying to get up every day and running out the door to go tell people your story.
Mm-hmm.
And I can honestly tell you, that's how I feel about it. I mean,
awesome.
And that's why I love using simple terms. I'm not a consultant by training, so ours is such a practical approach. And I love terms like stuck and unstuck, because, and my family cracks up now. We'll be traveling somewhere and see something, or somebody will say, hey, I'm stuck on this. And they'll look at me and they're like, Dad, please don't start giving the Unstuck speech.
They're like, oh, every time you say it,
in the middle of the mall, you know, and, but I'm biased, I know, but I think that's how we should, you know, approach what we do. And so, I used it then, I use it now. And I shared with you earlier that I'm helping this big private company now about, you know, part-time. And somebody asked me the other day, it's like, wow, you kind of have two jobs now. I'm like, yeah, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I still have, you know, I'm still chairman at GXG, and I get to help this other company. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, what are you doing there? I said, well, the cool thing is I'm doing exactly what I did before, doing exactly what I taught at GXG, using the same methodologies, because I believe in it and it works. You know?
Yeah.
To answer your question, I'm always using my book stuff because, I believe in it.
It's funny. I had an employee issue a few months ago, and I had to refer back to my book, and I was just like, What did I say about leadership in that one?
That's funny.
Like, that's go off a deep end and start yelling because they made a mistake that they shouldn't have. But I'm like, okay, time out.
Pause and read a chapter.
Check
real
the book,
quick,
man. reboot.
I like that a lot. See, that's why I can't write more than one book. I'd be never smart. I'd never be smart enough to remember more than one book, right? I can only remember 100 pages, I guess. But
yeah, but if it's edited well, part of the reason that I wrote my book is because I read a lot.
Yeah.
Of business books, leadership books, all that jazz.
Yeah.
I think they could be condensed down to a couple paragraphs.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? And it's funny. I've had so much feedback on my book regarding the length and I'm going to take it positively because most people say it very positively. Mm-hmm. But of course my cynical friends are always pointing out that I wasn't smart enough to write more than 100 pages, which is probably true, but people tend to like it. I've had a lot of people that have actually, the ones that have read it and said, I love it because I could sit down and read it in one sitting. I got the message. I got the examples. I can actually go do this.
Yeah.
And that's really meaningful to me because the reality is we all are pretty busy and unless you're just a wonderfully avid just reader, like my wife will read 2 or 3 books a week, and I just never been. Oh yeah, no, she is a voracious reader. She's great at it, loves it, but I think most of us are probably not in that camp. So I've gotten a lot of good feedback about the short book.
That's awesome. Yeah. I would love to say that I read 2 or 3 books a week, but
I know it. Me too.
I'm not that quick of a reader.
And I've tried. See, now I beat the system. So here's a quick story for you. So what I do now, cause I get, you know, I'm given a lot of books, I'm sure like you are. And so I end up bringing them home and all kinds of stuff. And so my wife said, hey, what's that book? And I'm like, so what I know will happen is, and I'll put it on my little stack, which I never get to, but I know what'll happen is she will read them. When I know she's read them, tell me about that book. And it's awesome because she'll like summarize it for me. So I've got my built-in audiobook summary, which is also my wife. So it's the best of both worlds. So she's happy because she read the book. I'm happy because I got the content summarized and we're done. So
you learned that's how I read now. What are some of the things that you've learned about being your own boss or being an entrepreneur since you started over the course of 6 years that you probably didn't know before you started?
A couple things. One is that it's a lot harder than it looks. Mm. I had the misconception that because I ran a, you know, multi-billion dollar company all over the world, that, you know, starting a small company and doing this kind of work would just somehow be easier. And it's actually just the opposite. I find in many ways it's harder. Mm-hmm. And again, kind of what we were talking about earlier, because you don't have all this stuff at your disposal. You don't have a big marketing team. You don't have all these budgets. You don't have all this stuff. I mean, and so that was learning number one, is that it's not easy. Number two is having an amazing product, which we do. I mean, that's what the book's about, is our product is a methodology. So we think we broke the code on this. We think it's the coolest thing ever. We know it works. And whether it's a service product like ours or a physical product like a lot of people invent, the other learning is that's just the beginning of the journey. Mm. And if you're in the consulting or advisory space at any level, the hardest part is building the pipeline into whatever client you're trying to work with.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of 101 stuff. Mm-hmm. But guess what? As a small company, that's different than as a big company. Because again, you don't have a brand. You so graciously pointed out that no one's ever heard or cares about GXG, and you're right. Right? That's my summary of what you were saying.
Like that.
I just summarize. It's my paraphrase, but it's fair. And it's true, right? But that's true for any new small business.
Totally.
So that's what I mean by it's hard. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? Well, you've got to learn quickly. And this is the curve we went through for about 2 years. It's like, okay, that's why advisory firms never scale. Because they quit. You just quit. Now, I happen to be completely obsessed with Angela Duckworth's work on grit. And if your audience has never studied grit, if you've never read Duckworth's research, go buy the book and read it. I read her papers back way before she wrote the book, started studying grit. it's, in my opinion, I actually do some talks on it now on a version of it. Number one correlator of quote success that I have found across any metric. So the good news is I was obsessed with this before I started my own company. And I would say that's the single biggest thing that I learned is that it's important in a big company. It's important across anything you do, but as a small business owner, there was nothing more meaningful for me than to be pretty high on the grit scale, hire people that are high on the grit scale, and you can improve your grit score teaching people how to improve it. And I can say that my original team, most of my original team is still with me. And as we've grown, that core team is there because they moved up the grit scale. That's my single biggest learning, because it ain't easy. There's nothing easy about it that I found. Anyway, I know some people get lucky and they start something and it just flourishes. But when you're in the advisory space and you've got to go start creating big relationships with all sizes of companies, convince them that this new thing works, and then have them try it, get paid for doing it, start to get repeat business. You know the drill. All of these things, that takes a couple of years to get that kind of traction.
And
you got to invest some money. And so it's very easy to give up. And I'm very grateful for the, again, really learning the grit stuff way before I needed it before. I really needed it the first few years of doing this. So those have been some of my really big learnings, at least the first 4 or 5 years I've been doing this.
That's huge. You remind me of a guy. I got a father of a buddy of my kids. He works at Pepsi. And through all this going on, he's trying to resell, I guess, restaurants or get them back online. With his product. And he was joking, because these guys are, they're having a rough time financially because they're trying to recover out of this thing. And he's like, where are you going to go? RC Cola?
That's funny.
I was frustrating because from a, like, he's coming from corporate. Standing behind the brand kind of thing of Pepsi. And I'm like, what's wrong with RC Cola as a business owner?
Nothing at all.
I'm like, they have a little bit of leverage, man. I don't know if people walk out of restaurants because they don't have whatever cola they're after.
Isn't that funny? But it is true. And I've enjoyed being on the other end of that, because I was one of those guys. I mean, my company in the space we played in, we were the brand. We were a really good company. And so I enjoyed the luxury of that. So it's fun for me. And if you think about the consulting space, particularly the big three or four firms, I mean, Bain, McKinsey, BCG, you know, these are some of the smartest people on the planet. We've got an amazing business model. I don't particularly love it. That's why I started this, because I think there's a better alternative. But I can tell you, when you, you know, the first 2 years and you walk in and it's like, well, we're right in the middle of a Bain study. And like, but hear us out. Here's why this is a little different approach, different whatever. That's a very real thing. I mean, the 800 pound gorilla concept is very real. Now, the cool thing is, it is the bigger they are, the bigger they are, the harder they fall kind of thing. Our best clients today, I can tell you, are people that have been through traditional consulting and tried the little guy's methodology, and then they never leave us. We literally, one of the things that I'm most proud of our team for is in the 5 years we've been doing this, we've not had one client leave, and our engagements are very short term. They tend to take about 3 or 4 months. So we still have all of our clients have never left, and they've all done more work with us. And that's pretty cool, because that's very unusual in the advisory space. And I think part of it is because of the grittiness that you have to get whatever your product is going against, quote, the big guy, right? Pepsi versus RC is a great example, James. But once you break through that, the confidence it gives your team is incredible. I mean, it's incredible. And you do feel a little bit like this is real, because it got tested by the big guys. And that's pretty cool.
You beat Goliath.
So the RCs hang in there. That's what I said. Read the grid book. Read Unstuck, but I mean, read the grid book also. So
Grit was an interesting book. I remember watching her. Cool. I think she had a TED Talk, right?
Yeah, she did a TED Talk. That's when she kind of came. She was a researcher, and when I found it, it was amazing, because it was just research papers and data. Mm-hmm. And I love data and stuff. Because what I was trying to solve for, a quick story, was that our company was doing very well. And I was having trouble explaining why we were doing so well. It was a really hard time.
Oh.
And that was more frustrating for me. It's actually easier, I think, as a leader when things are going poorly to figure out and explain that than it is often when things are going really well. So I was trying to figure it out. And so I finally bumped into this. I was on a plane and I was just reading stuff and articles. And I'm like, wow, what is this grit thing? And then I realized you could measure it. You can do this grit score test. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. Maybe that. And I went and tested my senior leadership team. And as a group, we were off the chart on the grit score. Very diverse team in a good way. Yeah, we were very high grit score. And all of a sudden it was like, wow, that was the secret sauce. It wasn't just our product or we were smarter than people. It's probably just the opposite, but we had a super high grit score. Sure. So I thought that's the difference. And so I started studying it and really working with it in different ways to incorporate it into it. And I still use it today. I mean, I build teams around it. It's just a big part of it. I used it in parenting, all kinds of different ways to use it.
Did you have your wife take the test?
Yeah. My wife, my family, they're all into the grit score stuff. And my kids have used it. My kids have done very well. They're out of college. Three that are out of college have all really done well. And I think part of it is they bought into the concept and they use it. And it's a real differentiator. I think it's the highest correlator of quote success, however you want to define success. If you look at the research, and there's so much data and research on this topic, and like, how do you get to whatever goals you want to get, however you define success, I think this is the best correlator is the grit score.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, perseverance. That's huge.
Yeah. And it's this combination of perseverance and passion. And mm-hmm. the thing I love most about it is you can improve your grit score if you want to.
Yeah.
So it's not just a foregone conclusion. It's not like a lot of the personality, social style testing we do. Right. Mm-hmm. Myers-Briggs, all this stuff, super helpful, but that's static, right? That's mm-hmm. just an awareness, which is fine. What this is say, okay, if you're a 3.5 on the grit scale of 5.0 and you want to be above 4, you can go do that. Mm-hmm. There's ways you can improve it. And I love stuff like that because you can be as gritty as you want to be is the way I look at it. So
I like that.
Cool. It's cool stuff. Yeah. Very cool stuff. Yeah.
Craig, where can people find you?
Yeah, easiest way is gxg.co. I'm on LinkedIn. Just go search me on LinkedIn. We post tons of content on LinkedIn. Again, I love to share our body of work, our wisdom-based learning methodology. Mm-hmm. So love to connect with people on LinkedIn, and then check out our website. We have all kinds of, again, like to just be very open with our content. So
nice.
That's the best way to find me.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Well, Craig, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
It's super cool interviewing small business owners of any kind. That's just a given, right? Because there's some intelligence there. There's drive, persistence, grit, all that jazz.
Yeah.
There's always, with all of them, myself included, there's a little bit of ego because there has to be.
Yeah, right.
That's just the name of the game, which is, that's fun too, to a point.
Sure.
But it's also you coming from the corporate and publicly traded side and just saying see what next level is and going off on your own.
Yeah.
That's admirable. It's cool.
I appreciate that. It's been a blast. I told somebody in a talk I did the other day, I had the best big company job you can have. And now I have the best little company job. So I'm super fortunate and very blessed to be able to do this. And thanks for having me. Like I said, I love the work you're doing both with the podcast and then your coaching practice. And I love people like you that have a passion for sharing other people's wisdom and helping people learn and grow. And thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being on. Yeah. You never stop learning. It's always
fun. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. We are underwritten locally by the Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, which you probably are, please give a thumbs up, subscribe, comment, share, and of course, tell all your entrepreneurial friends. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for service businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs looking for growth on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Craig LeMasters, the author of Unstuck and the chairman of GXG. Craig, I forgot to ask you, where can people find your book?
Actually, you can just Google it. It's on Amazon, all the traditional sales places. But yeah, find us on Amazon is the best place.
Awesome. And the title is Unstuck. Is there more to it than that?
Yeah, it's Unstuck, Unlocking and Activating the Wisdom of Others. That's the tagline.
I love it. That's super cool.
Excellent.
Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.